Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I will give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce Nathan, who is here to talk about his experience as a gay man growing up in a conservative state, and now he's living in a metropolitan area. Nathan, I'm so happy that you're here to talk to us today. Why don't you tell us who you are?
Thank you, Sarah. It's a pleasure to be here. My name's Nathan. I went to school with Sarah. That's how we know each other. But I currently work as a music director and choir director, organist for a church, as well as a restaurant server and bartender, which is both very interesting things to deal with during this COVID crisis that we're dealing with. But as you mentioned, I am a gay man, grew up here in Pennsylvania, originally from a really rural town. But now, as you've said, I've kind of made my way down as a country mouse. You made it down to the city. So
why don't you start with where you grew up? What was your town like? How did they have any acceptance of, probably when we were younger, the LGBT community didn't quite exist, but just kind of the gay community and all of that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I grew up in a very rural town by the standards of where I live now. But compared to the areas around me, it was rather built up. I think my school had one of the largest graduating classes in the county, which was about like 180. So which by the numbers down here is very small. But I grew up, I was raised Roman Catholic, which is a very conservative viewpoint to start with. Both my parents are Republicans. And I was, you know, surrounded by people who grew up in any form of, you know, you had educated, well-off people. A lot of them worked for the local hospital or were engineers, especially chemical engineers for some of the local areas, all the way to more redneck. Maybe I don't know if redneck's the right term to use, but definitely more rural living, different viewpoint. And what kind of made my situation particular is that I came out when I was in third grade, actually. So it was a very early start for me when I realized who I was.
So did you come out then sort of right after you knew, or because it was, as you said, so early, or did you kind of hold it in for a while?
Actually, I guess I was a little off. I came to the realization of my attractions in third grade. It was around fifth grade, actually, when I confided to someone that I thought that I might have been bisexual. In particular, there was a girl in my class that I always had this like bond with, and like I wanted to marry, quote unquote. And it's still something we laugh about today. So I told someone in fifth grade, and it very quickly spread. Which of course everyone was like, they'd never even considered any of this at this age, like, you know, in fifth grade, at least for us, was nothing ever talked about. You had, like Will and Grace on TV, and, you know, Ellen had her show, and Rosie O'Donnell had a show at the time. So like, technically there's gay figures out there, but it wasn't, I don't want to say ubiquitous, but it wasn't quite out in the popular media or the pop culture as it is now.
Yeah, most definitely we have come a long way, even though we're both millennials and still quite young. Was there anyone else in your school or your surrounding area who was also in this community? Or like, did you spark anyone else confiding in you, or were you kind of holding your own?
It's funny. So when I started fully coming out, because it wasn't too long after that someone pointed out to me that I never talked about women, I only talked about guys, that I kind of realized, oh, I think I jumped a step here. And it immediately led to kind of like a bullying situation where I was like looked at as that other and placed out as the other. And instead of treating it as a burden necessarily, I took it on as like a badge of pride, even that early. It definitely, yeah. So I fought back against these people by being even more flamboyant or pushing being gay even further, which then, cause ahead of me, there were, I knew some guys who were in our high school, like a couple grades ahead of me, who were gay, but they never were out per se. And they always marveled at me, being like, how did you come out of here out of nowhere and to be so confident in yourself? And I did have, my first boyfriend was actually when I was in 9th grade, he was in 8th grade. It didn't end well. It ended pretty quickly, but I did kind of jostle things. And I recently, when I was home, I spoke with an old teacher and she told me that in many ways, I was a bit of a trailblazer for my hometown, because since then a lot more people have been able to feel comfortable with themselves. And especially this younger generation kind of gets it and seems to get themselves a little better than we did. So it's interesting to see how many trans and gay and lesbian people are coming out of my school now compared to when I was there.
Yeah, and I think that definitely has to do with what they're seeing in the media. They're seeing a lot more of it, especially even in places of power, in politics, and just in general on
pop
media.
Culture,
yeah, exactly, pop culture. So you mentioned that when you first were kind of exploring this idea that you were questioning if you were bisexual. Did that last long, or did you immediately switch to, nope, it's just men?
Yeah. So when, like I said, someone pointed it out to me that I never talked about girls. At that point I said, yeah, you're right. And I now kind of look back at and say that I put myself in a bit of a bubble, that I said, yes, I'm only into men. This is all, you know, that's as far as it's going to go. And I still had the thing with sexuality and gender is that it's fluid. And at this time, I had no concept of that. For many of us, we always viewed sexuality as a black and white. You're either gay or you're straight. There's still people like to joke that bisexuals don't exist, which is a horrible joke because, of course, they do. But I kind of put myself in that box. It wasn't in college was when I started to kind of maybe question it a little more. But that was also definitely probably due to the influence of alcohol, I have no doubt.
So, and I know since we went to college together, I cannot speak to any of those alcoholic moments of yours, but I do know that you were definitely accepted we were both in the music community on campus. So I know you were definitely accepted at any point. When you first came to college, where like nobody knows anybody, or at least I knew nobody. I'm not sure if you came with people that you might have known.
I was the only one from my high school, and the only other people I knew were some people from the music festivals I did in high school.
Okay.
But otherwise, no. I kind of went in to a school like just on my own.
Yeah. So did you at any point kind of have to like re-come out in the community, or did everyone just kind of like know and probably make the assumption, as you said, because you were a bit flamboyant, or was that kind of a new experience because you had been in your hometown for so long and now you were somewhere else?
So I think the biggest thing, once I got to high school, I was at a summer camp where I had a counselor who is still one of my greatest mentors. Also gay, and he sat me down, and it was a day that I had eyeliner on and my hair was done in some ridiculous way. I was being performative, as I tend to like to do, and he pulled me aside and he just very politely but firmly said, "What are you doing? What are you trying to achieve?" And it was from that talk that I started to tone it down a little bit. I still like had my moments and my flares. But especially when I got to college, I actively decided that I wanted to move towards a more, I don't know if I want to say masculine, but I guess I was trying to find more my genuine self over this performative self. And so there was definitely, starting in college and from then on, especially after being in a fraternity, which definitely changed my relationship with my masculinity. When I got to college, I started, people would every so often kind of ask, like, are you gay? And it was because I still have certain mannerisms, especially I think there's inflections in my voice that sometimes give me away, as well as my choice of vocabulary in a lot of ways. I think it's a nice thing that it gets conflated, but people say because you talk so intelligently, we just assumed you were gay, which I don't know what kind of stereotype that is, but I mean, I guess I'll take it.
Yeah, that is not a stereotype I have heard, but I keep hoping that we will get farther and farther away from stereotyping. But definitely, especially like in media, on performative media, you definitely saw the gay person as overly flamboyant. And it was always...
Absolutely. I think of like Jack from Will and Grace, for example. He was a bouncy, off the wall, just like flaming homosexual, like head turning every time a hot guy came by, which I mean, that kind of was me still. That's kind of sometimes is still me still. But that was the image that we were given.
Yeah. So then when you were in college and you were going back to your hometown, were you had been out in your hometown, so like people knew, but were you ever fighting this issue of the college campus was a little bit more liberal, but then you were going home to a more conservative area? Did that cause any problems?
The only reason why it probably didn't is because I have a tendency to keep to myself. I think the biggest thing college taught me about myself is that I'm not an extrovert. I'm actually an introvert, which was a complete flip of my personality for me. So it never was that big of an issue for me necessarily. No, I forced my town to like to the word I want. I kind of made my town work for me in a way. And a lot of that was just accepting, like sometimes when I walk down the street, someone's going to shout a slur out their moving window. Like sometimes I'm going to get looks for what I'm wearing or because I'm holding hands with a guy. But I'd become so confident in myself from the years of being so performative and flamboyant that none of those things really seemed to touch me.
Cool. That's great to hear. So now, at what point were you able to move out of your hometown and get to a more metropolitan area where I'm assuming more metropolitan areas tend to be more accepting? So when did that happen and what was that initial experience like?
Right. Well, so after college, I was accepted into a program where I studied and performed in Austria for 6 weeks. So I spent, and then I stayed bookends with some friends that I had over there. So I spent about 2 months in Austria. And while I was over there, I was being courted by a guy that I'd been talking to for, at that point, about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And we, you know, we FaceTimed, we, you know, kept communications. And when I came back, we officially started dating. And after... it wasn't quite a year. It wasn't quite a full year of us dating that we had an opportunity to move down here outside of Philadelphia. And so it was in 2016. It was right around the election in 2016 was when I moved down here. I was officially moved in on the day of the 2016 election.
And how was the 2016 election for you?
It was pretty dreadful. We started the day with hope, and by the end of the night, we didn't even wait for the full tally to come through. We just turned off the TV and went to bed because we kind of saw the writing on the wall. It was tough because I was very passionate at this time. I started becoming very much more politically trying to be more in tune with politics and world events, starting in 2015 with the refugee crisis from Syria. And so to watch someone who I saw as the absolute antithesis of what this country was supposed to be being given the reins was a really it was a devastating moment. I was definitely in shock for, I'd say, almost a month.
Yeah, I think a lot of people definitely were. And it's good to hear that you were with someone who was going through the same things as you were, especially in those moments where the needle literally went from one side to the other, and all of a sudden our future was completely changing.
Although I should bring up too that we had, so we live with roommates, and we broke up, but we're still best friends, we're still roommates. A long story, but gay relationships can get complicated sometimes. But at the time that we lived together, there was another gay couple who lived in our house as well. The one was actually friends with my ex from college. And so what the interesting about them were they were both pro-Trump. And especially the one who was the most vocal of them was also a Black American gay who voted for Trump and is probably still a pretty avid supporter.
Yeah, and that's definitely difficult to deal with. So how has the past 4 years been then in terms of seeing different legislations? You mentioned the crisis in Syria. Where have your passions kind of aligned in the political climate?
So I'm definitely on the left side of the spectrum. I always have been. I guess I would describe myself as a democratic socialist, although I don't necessarily always support Bernie, but that's its own discussion. And so I've always, my heart always goes out to those who can't defend themselves and those who, in many ways, can't even provide for themselves, whether it be refugees, whether it be the homeless, whether it be gay or transgendered kids who were kicked out of their homes and now living on the streets. A lot of that is definitely where a lot of my attention has been. Also just trying to, in my own way, keep people aware of everything that's happening. The last 4 years have just been an absolute maelstrom of just news on news on news, and what of it actually matters, what of it is being swept under the rug, and even more so, what could be the consequences and even the implications of actions. And then, of course, in the past, how many months has it been? I guess it's been 5 or so months since the George Floyd.
Has it really been that long?
Yes, because it was right around the beginning. It was just shortly after everything shut down. That's when a lot of my politics got pushed to a back burner because I realized in myself, I wasn't doing enough to try to speak for and use my privilege to speak for people of color and the disenfranchised. Because in many ways, it's interesting because growing up, I grew up in a very white town. There were just a handful of African-American students at my school. Most of them were actually in learning support, so I didn't really interact with them either. So I didn't have a lot of experience with diversity there. And especially moving down to this area and all the different friends that I've made who've grown up either, whether it be in Philly or outer Philly, and hearing their experiences has really shown me how much privilege I have had growing up. So it's been a roller coaster for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I will make a note just for the listeners that we are recording this on Sunday, September 20th. So by the time this comes out, plenty of things could have happened that we won't discuss because for us, it's the future and for you, it's the past. So I wanted to make that clear because we're definitely dealing with a lot right now in the United States. So now you're in the Philly area. What have you had any of those moments where you have felt ostracized or haven't felt like it's been okay to be authentic, or is it a lot better?
It's literally like a night and day from what I grew up with. I, especially in the last, it's been about probably like a year and a half or so, I started really making friends with some of the, I jokingly call it the Philly gays, or like gays of Philadelphia, because we're definitely a web. Like, any one gay guy you know is probably only like 6 degrees of separation away from someone else you know, even if they don't know each other. And so it's great to have those kinds of friends, kind of developing a family of its own. I've had coworkers of mine I don't know if I should even say what restaurant I work for, but because it is a bit, it's a big franchise. But a lot of my coworkers have been like queer or gay or trans. So that's been interesting. I've been able to go to, there's a great campground up in the Poconos. I'll plug it. It's called The Woods. I absolutely love it there. It's a gay clothing optional campground where I have never felt freer or more myself than anywhere else in the world, let alone the Philly bar. Like, the gay bar scene in Philadelphia is incredible, and I hope it survives our current situation.
Yes, definitely. So, difference. So you mentioned you work for a large franchise restaurant. You have all these sorts of different people that you work with. How did you end up getting into the religious church job that you are currently in? And how is that different than your other jobs?
So, a fun fact about me, I did mention I was raised Roman Catholic. I didn't mention that my mom was actually one of the organists of the church. So I actually grew up in the music ministry of a church. I was singing well before puberty. I was a boy soprano singing solo in the choir loft. I ended up joining the choir. I took piano lessons from the head organist of the church. So I always had that growing up, and there was definitely conflicts internally between my faith and my identity, which actually ended up pushing me kind of away from my faith. And I've had a bit of a journey of belief and faith. After graduating from college, I got a full position as an organist for a local Episcopal church back home that a friend of mine from the local theater scene was able to get for me. And so when I moved down here, I already had all that experience. I worked for an Episcopal church down here, a very large church, large choir, an organ that's larger than the Merler that's in Weber Chapel. Like, it was an incredible opportunity. I was a assistant organist for them. I'd be their rehearsal pianist sometimes. I sang in the choir. I sang solos. I even conducted the choir on a few occasions. So I had those moments. But then I went through another crisis of faith of sorts. And I stopped attending. I wasn't receiving calls asking if I could substitute. And I just kind of let it go and actually mentally wrote off being a church musician at all, kind of saying it doesn't align with my identity. So why do it just for a paycheck? And then one day when I was trying to be better about certain things, and I was starting to answer calls when they would come in, especially numbers that I didn't know. And I was at one of my restaurant jobs, a different restaurant that I worked for. And I received a phone call, and it was a local pastor saying, "Hi, I heard your name from the local Episcopal church. We're looking for a substitute organist, and we're also looking for a full-time music director and choir director." And so and this church is a Methodist church, which I did not have a lot of experience with Methodism. And so I came and I attended a service, and I found it very moving, and I love, and it's a smaller church, but it's a very tight-knit community. And I felt immediately welcomed. I stepped in and was substitute organist for a few Sundays. This was literally about a year ago, almost perfectly a year ago, because I was officially hired in October of last year, and is installed as organist. And it's been an incredible journey, especially to really experience having a church family and to kind of look at the Bible and look at the story of Jesus and his teachings and what they were meant to mean and like how and how to live by those messages. So it's been, once again, quite a journey.
Yeah, and honestly, like, it felt so heartwarming to hear that you were immediately accepted, but also just how you got the job. I wish getting jobs was always that easy. Oh, I heard about you, and we like you.
Right, right. And it was also really endearing that through the entire process, especially the hiring process, I was unaware at the time, but the Methodist Church has been going through a bit of, well, not a bit, a rather large discussion about the inclusion of LGBTQ members. And the church is actually kind of on the precipice of splitting over this issue, which the Methodist Church has had this history before, because they also split over segregation once upon a time. And so it was very endearing that through the entire interview process that they kept pointing out, like, you know, don't, you know, just understand that every church is different and like different communities, like there's more accepting communities than others. That I happen to find myself in one that's not just very accepting me as being gay, but like has also been fantastic through this current situation with like supporting Black Lives Matter movement and messages has been really empowering.
Yeah, that's definitely great to hear. I feel like you don't hear those messages a lot from religious institutions, but that could also just be I'm not involved in any religious institutions, and those that are near me, I would assume, are very conservative.
It's true. And also the ones who speak the loudest tend to be the ones who have the much more conservative view. So it's very easy to kind of lump all Christians into believing that they're anti-gay or that, you know, they don't want to even tolerate LGBTQ issues. Because many are, but they're not the loudest, and they're, you know, you kind of have to search and find some of them.
Yes, definitely. The size of your voice is going to affect what everyone else hears. I don't know if you have been back home in the last, and I don't know exactly where you grew up, but if you've been back home in the past, even just like 2 months, but the amount of political signs that are out here and how some are much bigger than others is quite drastic.
Right. And I can imagine when I first moved down here, so I now live in Chester County, which is one of the, I think, one of the richest counties in the country or something of that nature. And it is a red county for the most part. And I live in a community where there's definitely families with a lot of money. And I'll never forget when we first moved in, there was a very, very large, well, very large pro-Trump signs as we drove into our community. And there was one particularly large one that spelled out Hillary and added different words, like an acrostic, different words for each letter of Hillary. And my favorite one was that for the letter Y, it was merely the question, why? And it's something that will always stick with me. And this family and this house currently has Trump signs out now, but, mm-hmm. but they're much smaller this year. And also, I've seen many more Biden signs around me now than I saw Hillary signs when I moved here. So that's very encouraging.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely, I have seen the acrostic signs this year. There is one household that has a large, basically like a sheet that they post. They spray paint different sayings like each week. And it's always very entertaining as I drive to work to see, oh, what will it be this week? I will support people who have the small signs out. They're respectfully announcing their political opinion. But when you get that large and that homemade, and I just don't understand that. Why you need to be so big about it.
Well, it's definitely an overcompensation. Definitely. And I think that a lot of conservatives are scared right now because I mean, knock on wood, and I only have granite around me, I don't have wood, but knock on wood, the writing seems to be on the wall for Trump. But I mean, after what happened 4 years ago, I don't really trust polls anymore, and I can only trust my vote and trying to make sure that those around me vote as well.
Yeah. So at any point, have you felt like you haven't wanted to be where you are, that you felt I shouldn't have moved here, there are still people? Or has it kind of been, you always have these communities that are willing and accepting that you think you've made the right decisions?
I always wanted to move out of my town. I mean, when I was in college, especially, but when I was in high school, if you would ask me, where do you see yourself in 5 years? My answer was almost definitely Europe. I mentioned that I studied in Austria, and when I went for that program, I actually went with the one-way ticket because I was trying to keep my options open, because I definitely, if I could have worked and moved to Austria, I definitely would have tried to go down that path. But I always wanted to move out, and I always wanted to be nearer to a city, because growing up in the middle of nowhere, your resources are very limited. And opportunities very limited. And especially with a music degree, I didn't see much reason to stay. So I definitely feel like I've made the right choice to live in an area where I have more opportunities and more resources. But I also am really thankful that I made this move because of the friends, you know, sounds cliche, but the friends I made along the way.
Yes, full of cliches. Now, would you go back to Austria if you had the chance? Would you leave the country and go work there full time?
If I could move, yeah, 100%. Especially if it was like, you know, within music. I was fortunate that I, even though in my small area, I had the opportunity to study German. And I had a excellent high school teacher. I mean, everyone had to take certain levels of language. And so there were a lot of people who didn't pay attention and didn't care to learn. But we had a good handful of us that to the very end, and we pushed each other, and we would, like, you know, make each other like get better. And then in college, after I studied Italian for 3 semesters, and then I joked that I took a break from languages my fourth semester. But the last 4 semesters, I studied German as well. And I was constantly asked by my professors why I didn't have a German minor. And I've always, even when I was in high school, I got comments from native speakers that I spoke, quote, without an accent. Like, I spoke in a recognizably German, I use German in quotations, because especially lately when I speak to people who are familiar with the German language, I know a Polish couple that comes to my restaurant that I know pretty well, or even when I'm over in Austria, my accent is Austrian, and I come across as an Austrian German speaker. So I would happily, because every time I've traveled there, I've kind of just blended in. People have assumed I'm a native. I get asked directions. I get asked like where the nearest like U-Bahn stop is. Like, people try to practice their English or German on me, depending on, you know, which way it rolls. But if given the opportunity, I would in a heartbeat move over there.
That's really cool to be that fluent and not even have lived there at any point for more than like 6 months, a year, that you're fully immersed, that you've had those immersion options. Do you continue, like you mentioned that one couple, do you continue to have a chance to practice the various languages?
I've definitely tried to take advantage of tools like Duolingo, especially like any kind of free tool to practice. My biggest way, I do have, like, as I mentioned, I have some friends in Austria, and now and again, like, I'll message them in German, they'll respond in English, we'll kind of go back and forth, try to help each other out. My biggest tool that I use to try to keep at least my ears sharp, as I put it, is I use YouTube a lot. And I'll watch, especially Deutsche Welle is a great news news platform in Germany. It's a state-sponsored news platform, but they have a great YouTube presence as well. So I'll watch news stories in German because I'm generally aware of current events. So that definitely helps me kind of just understand along with it, as well as like pop music is great. Where my fluency in German started was studying German art song, because I started studying art song in high school. And German art song through college was even kind of a specialty niche of mine. So that's where a lot of my like vocabulary comes from. It's possibly where a lot of my accent even comes from when I speak German. But I'm now starting to listen to more alternative artists, as well as even some like German rap and like hip hop, which is like the last language you would expect, but it's kind of crazy to hear someone like spitting out these ridiculous sentences with these long words with all these consonants just all stacked on top of each other. And it's an incredible experience to just hear that just like just fly out of their mouth. So that's yeah, the way that I try to keep German fresh in my ears.
No, that's a really great option as well. And I mean, you have a music background, so it makes sense that music would be one of the key ways to keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think I have any other questions for you on any of the big topics. Is there anything else that you want to mention that you feel should be heard?
It's kind of like, it's a story of sorts. It's a message of no matter who you are, your actions speak volumes. So as I mentioned in high school, it was kind of a tough row because at first I was not really accepted. People tried to mess with me, and it wasn't until I got into a fist fight in middle school that people stopped trying to actively mess with me, but there was still verbal and such situations. And when I was I was either junior or senior in high school, and one of my biggest bullies, who somehow was also kind of one of my crushes, weird how that happens, but one of my bullies was in a gym class with me, and also in this gym class were a bunch of like his crew, as well as like literally the who's who of the star athletes of my class. And then there's me, and I've never tried to say I was athletic in any way, shape, or form. I did music and theater. That worked just fine for me. But and it was during a period of time where we were doing swimming. And so naturally we had to change, and that involved, you know, taking everything off. And we were encouraged to go use the showers. And so my bully really leaned into me and was like, oh, I'm not doing this around, you know, I'm not going to use the words that he used, but, you know, using every slur he could think of to refer to me. And I just remember, his name was Jared, standing up, looking him right in the eyes and said, listen, Nathan's a great guy. He's not, you know, out to get any of us. Like, let him just be. And then he dropped trowel fully naked and walked right by me to walk to the showers. And then the other star athletes who were around him, who I was not friends with like these guys necessarily. I was friends with all the girls that they were friends with, but I wasn't friends with these guys necessarily. And they all kind of looked at each other, dropped trowel, followed suit. And that was the biggest time that I felt accepted and seen. And so those actions mean a lot and can really resonate in many ways, in many directions.
Yeah, that's such a great story. And I apologize, I was here like silently laughing, thinking about these young men just like dropping trowel in a swimming locker room. I think everyone has strange experiences in swimming locker rooms, but yours definitely stands out and is a really great moment. So before we wrap up, with all of my guests, I want to do this random segment to kind of end on a lighthearted note, that story was a great place to end, where I'm going to ask a really random question.
Okay.
Nothing to do with anything we've talked about today, but just extremely random. What is your favorite Disney animated movie?
Oh, man. That's a really great question. I think for me, you got to go back in the vaults, and there's some questionable segments of it. However, Fantasia, full on. Like, especially the first one. I think the first one was conducted by Ormandy, which is a lot better than, I can't even think of his name, James Levine, who conducted Fantasia 2000, which he's had such a huge sex scandal in the past couple of years. But more so just this concept of visualizing music and creating a tapestry of experience and sensation from music, even music that didn't have a storyline necessarily.
All right, so now it's time to wrap things up with this podcast. There will be more information down in the description where you can find me and the podcast Introducing Me. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and there's also a Patreon page if you would like to support the podcast. And if you are interested in being a guest yourself, you can email me at introducingmepodcast@gmail.com. I'm super grateful for Nathan to spend some time with me this afternoon to tell his story. And I appreciate the listeners here for taking time out of your day to hear his story. So until next time, thanks. Bye.
Tschüss.